So I've just got off a plane from Singapore. Might be slightly jet lagged, but there's still a question in my mind. How can any of us, especially leaders of organizations, stay ahead or get ready for emerging technology? Almost every day, something changes and there's just going to be no let up whatsoever. So as always, I've got off a plane and I've got to find someone who is far wiser than me. And I've done just that, because I've been looking forward, as always, to talking to Yulia Barnikova, who is a former colleague, also a TEDx speaker, an emerging tech strategist currently at Accenture, but as I say, someone who can try and give me the answers to some of these curious questions. Come back to me just after this break. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to the Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. So it's a huge welcome to Yulia. Yulia, thank you for joining me on the Leadership Enigma. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm super excited to talk about all of this swirling tech around us. So really excited to discuss.
Just tell everyone where you are at the moment, where you're located.
Sure. I am coming to you from the Philadelphia area, or specifically Delaware, or Delaware, as some people say it, where we are the tax-free shopping haven on the East Coast. So for all of your tech needs, feel free to stop on by here.
Well, there you go. I didn't know that for sure. Before we get into this, Yulia, I have so many questions because it's just such a movable platform. How on earth did you even end up in this area? Because I know this is your real passion and focus now, but how did you end up in it?
That's a great question. So right now I am kind of, people know me as this like crazy mad scientist tech experimenter, but it was definitely not always this way. I got into this space many years ago as an analyst. So when I was first starting in consulting, I didn't really think of myself as a technology person. Yeah. Or really didn't think that I was interested in technology because I'd never worked for an IT organization. I didn't really know about, computers too much, but I was always very creative. Like I would always, like when I was little, I would make these stop motion animations with McDonald's Happy Meal toys. So I would take my parents' camcorder and I would just like, kind of move them one frame at a time until I made stories with them, and would always be very unique assignments that I would turn into my teachers, but was always trying to find new ways of communicating and telling stories. But again, didn't think of myself as a tech person. But then one day as an analyst, kind of cranking through PowerPoint decks, I thought, well, let's make some things a little bit more interesting. And so I started playing around with PowerPoint animations. Now, I'd never done it before. So at first, my animations were just kind of like those like flash-by animations, like the ones that kind of give you a headache.
Sounds like my animations, Yulia.
Yeah. But I just kept experimenting, and I really turned to the internet to learn about different ways that you can combine animations together to create these effects. And so what happened is I actually, because I love to teach in general, like I was like a tutor and throughout college and all that kind of stuff, I started actually creating these YouTube tutorials for PowerPoint, and I kept gaining momentum. And at one point I was the largest PowerPoint YouTube channel, which is kind of a weird.
I never knew that, Yulia.
Yeah, it's, kind of a fun fact. And of course, like my students have now like surpassed me, overtaken me, which is fantastic because the space needs more great people talking about how to make great animations. But that was kind of how I realized that, hey, you know, this is a type of technology and this is something that I can do. And Microsoft actually started recognizing me as a Microsoft MVP, which is a kind of a lead user program they do. And from then on, I'm like, well, what's next? Like we, from 2D animation, what's next? And of course, it's the 3D layer, right? It's that immersion. How can we tell stories and communicate in a way that's more natural, more, you know, immersive? You feel like you're there with people. And that's what led me to XR or augmented reality, virtual reality, spatial computing, you know, metaverse, Web3, all this stuff that we're going to talk about. So ever since, I've been really passionate about kind of exploring the edges of what's possible and then telling or like kind of working with people to help them embrace it and then help their teams embrace it as well.
You see, I love that as a focus. It's exploring the edges of what's possible. And sometimes I use the phrase, it's the art of the possible. So I didn't know that about you. So there's almost that passion as a filmmaker and that passion with tech. And well, some may say the rest is history. But there is so much that we could talk about, Yulia. And thank you so much for coming on the show. I know I've been bugging you for a while now to find a time for us to chat. And, you know, we could talk about Web3, Gen AI, and or the metaverse. Can I start with the metaverse? Because I don't know enough about it. I'd love to get a definition from you. In fact, let me start there. How would we define the metaverse to those who are watching and listening to this show?
Sure, that's a great question. And the definition's been very fluid, especially the past couple of years. But the way that we think about it at Accenture is as a continuum. So we say the metaverse continuum because we recognize that it's not just one technology, but really it's a continuum of different things under this big umbrella. So one of those technologies is, of course, XR or augmented virtual reality. How do we kind of blend the physical and digital worlds together. So augmented reality being like Pokemon Go, where you can see digital overlays on top of your, you know, on top of the real world, and virtual reality, of course, being when you're fully immersed in a headset. Of course, you don't have to be in a headset. You could be on a browser. So like, you know, we're starting to see like 3D experiences on computers, on mobile phones emerge. So absolutely do not need to wear a headset to be part of this physical digital blend. And then of course there's also a piece around blockchain and new ways of ownership. So at Accenture, we kind of blend those together. It's like the XR and blockchain. And it's like, you know, imagine those two colliding and have, you know, we're having a baby, and that is the continuum, but then powered by Gen AI as well.
Wow. So it's an amalgam of all of it in some ways, Yulia.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for those kind of thinking about, well, what are more consumer practical applications of blockchain? We actually have these experiences that we've been creating that are like scavenger hunts. And it's kind of like Pokemon Go, where you're going around and collecting things that you're seeing through your phone. But those things, they don't just go into like a regular app, they go into a digital wallet. So you own those pieces, and then you can actually redeem them for different discounts and different perks that brands want to give you. We've been doing it for retail clients. We've been doing it for resorts. So pretty much anywhere where you want to increase foot traffic, you can create these scavenger hunts. And of course, there's like a lot of like traceability, sustainability examples with blockchain as well. But those are kind of like that top umbrella.
Well, as you describe that, Yulia, that prompts a different question to the one I did have in my mind. And that's when you describe what you just did, sounds like almost a new digital economy or even digital commerce. Now, we hear about, obviously, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, which I don't know the name of. But it sounds like there is something about a new digital economy and commerce system. Would that be fair as well?
Absolutely. So in kind of 2021-ish, yep, there was a huge explosion of digital assets and NFTs. And of course, there's been kind of a wave, and we're in a bit of a bear market and, you know, from that perspective. But the good news about that bear market is that a lot of the projects that were really hyped up are now kind of going down. And we're really seeing examples like Starbucks, for example, with their Odyssey program, where you're actually collecting, you're doing challenges to collect digital assets or NFTs to be able to redeem for perks in the future. And we've seen that with Reddit NFTs too, even though they don't use the word NFT.
And was that non-fungible token? Am I right in that? Look
Exactly,
at me.
non-fungible tokens. Good.
See, I've done my homework, Yulia. I didn't want to embarrass
Yeah,
myself on this episode,
exactly.
like I've done on so many occasions.
Absolutely. So it's kind of a new way for brands to interact with their consumers. It's
Right.
a way for consumers to sort of own a piece and of the brand and really share in the future of that brand as well.
Well, I'm going to come on to both opportunity and challenge. So let me just summarize for my own benefit and understanding as well, is actually when we talk about the infrastructure, you're saying it's actually a continuum, but it's a almost a collaboration of technologies that is the metaverse. Many people, and maybe I'm one of those people, thought maybe the metaverse was simply a virtual space that you can go and meet and or collaborate almost in avatar form. There's an element of that as well, isn't there, that is the metaverse.
Absolutely. So that's kind of where essentially the term has come from, is these virtual spaces where you can meet as avatars. Usually, when we start talking about it, we like to really broaden people's definition of it
Right.
because that usually people do have that very narrow view. But honestly, that is one of my favorite use cases, actually, is meeting people in these shared spaces. And we actually do that quite a bit at Accenture. We during the pandemic, we bought 60,000 headsets for our new joiners.
How many?
And ever
60,000.
60,000 Quest 2
Wow.
headsets.
Okay.
I think that's the largest purchase of largest enterprise purchase to date. And essentially, what we've used them for is meeting together in our one Accenture Park, which is kind of our like shared space for
Wow.
new hires. So instead of meeting on like a Zoom or Teams, which actually that's part of it, but a really big part of it is meeting together as avatars and having that shared onboarding experience and feeling together the same way that you would in a real life setting as well.
Now, am I also right in this? There was a lot of talk about the metaverse, and you and I have spoken before about the metaverse. But I feel that maybe the metaverse or the term got shoved into the shadows recently with ChatGPT and Gen AI. Did you sense that too, or are they coexisting, but we're just focusing on one more than the other at the moment?
That's a great question. Yeah, so there is, I think that the word metaverse is a bit of a loaded term right now. There's
Right.
some people who are just like, oh, metaverse, I am so done with it. But when you think about it as the continuum,
Yeah.
that's when you start to see where kind of the real value lies or kind of the broadness of the technologies underneath. So I'll start with that point. But certainly Gen AI has taken the world by storm ever since really ChatGPT came on the scene. I think it was November of last year, it became available
To
to
everyone,
the
just gave it to
public.
everybody.
Exactly. And then there's, of course, like image generators like Midjourney or DALL-E 2. There's voice generators like 11labs. I actually cloned my voice the other day and was able to change the language that I was speaking in. It wasn't very good yet, frankly. Like I was trying to change it to Italian and Hindi, but then native speakers kind of said, well, you sound like you have an accent in those languages. So it's still,
Okay.
work in progress. But the idea that
It's still
I'm not
progress.
a coder. I'm not going to say I'm not a tech person, but I'm not a coder.
Yeah.
So I can't, these tools were previously inaccessible to me. The fact that I can go in and in 5 minutes, I'm actually doing it with my kids too. Like, I'm like, let's pick a character, let's pick a voice, and let's animate it, and anybody really can do it now. That is the power, and that has been kind of taking the world by storm for sure.
Okay.
Now, to your question on the intersection, there's an absolute intersection. I mean, Gen AI really needs kind of an interface layer, as we like to say. So the kind of the visual elements of the metaverse provide that. The one example of that is visual bots. So it's, kind of if you take ChatGPT as the back end, we're starting to see a lot of clients start asking for how can we create more visual chatbots, essentially, that they have a face, they have a
So it's
persona,
powered by
and
ChatGPT.
exactly they're
Okay.
powered. So instead of asking kind of like where can I go to get this information, the same thing that you would get on like an FAQ, they're much more intelligent. They can kind of understand your context, where you're coming from, understand much more about your situation to be able to answer in a more nuanced way, just similar to the way that a human would. So that's one example. Another example is world building. So one of the challenges, or kind of maybe the blockers of having virtual worlds be more prominent or kind of get created more quickly, is just the manual, the kind of the manual labor, if you will, that it takes to create them, like from developing the assets, kind of designing like each of the spaces, the furniture that would go into a digital twin, for instance. But now with AI, we're starting to see like you can put in designing a space like this, and just like an image generator, it'll generate a whole what we call skybox, or like a whole kind of wrapped around
Right.
like 360 image, the kind that you would see on Google, like Google Street View, for
Gotcha.
example. Like that's already available with a tool called Skybox from Blockade Labs. So anyone can go in and just kind of create their own world. Same thing with assets. Like we're on the edge of us being able to scan to kind of take a picture of something, and then
Yep.
it automatically becoming a 3D model that you can put into these spaces.
And
So,
quickly as well.
and quickly, absolutely. So it's like one click, boom, drop it in. We are just on the edge of having that happen. Unity just actually released, at the time of this recording, they just released kind of a text to game system, and Unity is kind of one of the big players in game development. So
Right.
they're starting to think like, how can we accelerate the speed of game development? And that's just going to democratize things even further. So it is a whirlwind, but we absolutely see a huge intersection. It's kind of like metaverse will be fueled and accelerated by Gen AI.
Well, that's the, I suppose, the interesting, frightening thing all wrapped up in one. And I, again, it reminds me of when I spoke to Jonathan Reichenthal, who was describing the fourth industrial revolution to me, Yulia, and he said it was change at the speed of thought. And that's what I'm hearing you say, that change is going to be almost immediate, and it's gone open source. So now maybe you don't need armies of people now to develop and create. You actually can do that almost as an individual contributor. So with all of this change, with all of this shifting landscape, from a leadership point of view, Yulia, what would you say is the top focus for leaders right now for both the opportunity and the challenge that maybe they need to be aware of or just getting themselves ready for? Opportunity and challenge, what do you reckon? And I'm sure there's lots, but kind of what's top of mind for you?
Absolutely. So on the opportunity side,
Yep.
it is I would maybe it's an opportunity and a challenge. So the opportunity and challenge is that there's so much happening. So it's kind of like the top things we hear from leaders is, how do I stay on top of all this? Like things are changing almost literally every single day. Something new comes out, a new capability, especially on the Gen AI front. And the question is, how do we stay on top of all this? It's very exciting. We want to use it, but how do we stay on top of it? And kind of a sub question is, how do we start implementing that in a way that's responsible, that's ethical, and that will really set a foundation for us going forward? Which typically, you have to do that. That's a process that takes a while, but how do we do that quickly?
We're almost
How do
in
we
the
accelerate that?
technological Wild West, aren't we?
Absolutely. So that's kind of the biggest question for leaders, like how do I stay on top of all of this? And one of the ways that we've seen work really well
Yep.
is kind of looking at, you know, looking at your team and seeing who is naturally looking at this stuff. You know, it's, you know, it's typically there are a few people in your organization, your team, who are just naturally gravitating toward this or playing with Midjourney or 11 Labs, or they're kind of reading all the articles and they know all the copyright situations that are going on, which I can say an interesting story about that and how the laws are still very, very squishy right now. But take a look at your team, see who's really already doing it, yeah. And then invite them to a session, to an ongoing session, to kind of tell, you know, you and your team the state of the market. You know, what's interesting, what, you know, what's going on, what are they playing with, what do they think are opportunities for the business. So we do that quite a bit at Accenture in terms of like helping leaders with these kind of sessions. But typically the ones who are the most progressive have already been doing that with their teams. They've already been experimenting. They've already been kind of bringing them in.
Or at least finding the people, as you say, who have been proactive.
Finding the people. Yep. Exactly. Because it's impossible. Even if you're the most tech forward person, it's impossible to stay on top of it by yourself.
It's a team sport.
Like it may have been 5 years ago, but now it's impossible. It takes a village. It takes a team. So get those folks and start, you know, learning together really.
Gotcha. Okay. So you see, there's almost a, they're segued together, aren't they? Both the opportunity and the challenge. I've got a question on my mind though, because now, you know, I've just come back from Singapore. I say that because nearly all of the events that I'm involved in have become face-to-face again. And that's a delight. And, you know, we all had two and a half years of being entirely virtual. We are virtual now, so the systems and the tricks and the things that we've learned have stood certainly myself in good stead, and I'm grateful for them. But is there in some ways a threat to the human proximity piece? We were craving, most of us, to be together again as humans. Does much of this, and I'm thinking of the metaverse specifically, force us back into a digital world and away from human contact? I don't know. Is there a tension there, or is there not?
Yeah, I would say that it helps. It can definitely help to bring people together. I would say there is a bit of a tension. But what I'm seeing is that right now, at least with all the tools that we have out there, people still want to be in person.
Yes.
And they are craving that human connection. And so, you know, whenever, like what we're seeing with clients and even at Accenture is like, whenever there is an opportunity to be in person, we try to take it, even with, you know, all the VR and all the technologies available to us. But at the same time, when it is impossible or impractical, this offers the next best thing. To like a Zoom or a Teams call. So here's a very, very simple, very simple example.
Okay.
Right now, Accenture is testing out the early preview of Teams avatars. So right now, at the time of this recording, anyone can go in if you're a Teams, Microsoft Teams subscriber, and your company, you know, allows this, has it turned on, you can actually turn on, you can become an avatar. Instead of like seeing my face, you'll see my avatar on the screen. And people say, well, why do we need this? Like, I'd rather see your face than an avatar. But what we say is that actually, in, you know, there's some people who turn off their camera, right? For whatever reason, you know, they may be.
And it's tiring. Apparently, it's way more tiring if you're also looking at yourself on the screen.
Yeah, absolutely. So for many different reasons, people often choose to turn off their cameras on, you know, when they're speaking or when they're on a meeting. And what avatars do is they actually bridge the gap between seeing somebody on video and seeing somebody as like a small image, or even worse, like they're like, you know, their name or just the text, you know, especially as a presenter, when you're speaking to a sea of just little tiny pictures or
so
tiny
tough.
Like text names, it is, and you probably know this, you know, given how you present a lot, it is just not engaging. But If you're looking at a screen of avatars, it is way more engaging
That
as
are
a presenter.
animated. They're not static either. Just
They're animated,
right.
exactly. And they're standing there or they're sitting there and they're kind of like nodding. They're like,
They're not
they're kind
asleep.
of in a resting state. Exactly.
Not
And you can
asleep.
actually
That's
not asleep.
not. I'm not looking at avatars that will be asleep then, Yulia. I'm just checking
Oh.
there.
Yeah.
That's
Well, you
feedback
actually
for me.
could be asleep. You could be asleep
Yeah.
because they don't, the current ones, they don't look at your camera. They're actually disconnected from your camera.
Ah,
So you
right.
can walk away. I mean, this is a whole
Oh,
nother challenge, but
isn't it
typically, like,
just leave your avatar on for half an hour. Wow, okay.
exactly. You could actually leave and have your avatar like be sitting there and nodding like most of the time. But that's kind of a really good example of sort of bridging the gap because instead of, it's not as good as seeing people on the screen kind of looking at you and smiling and engaging in real time, but it's way better than seeing just a bunch of images and a bunch of like text in front of you.
Gotcha.
So in a way, it's kind of that stopgap between true being together and seeing each other in real life.
Now, Yulia, I spent many years of my life as a police officer and as a barrister where digital evidence was becoming more and more common in every single case. Every single one of us has a digital footprint. And so the law enforcement world certainly has got better and better and better at trying to understand what is right, what is wrong, and has someone in indiscretion or gone beyond the boundaries of what might describe as lawfully audacious. So I'm thinking about it from a company's point of view. How does a company try and embrace the art of the possible, but also not fall foul of things? Because we talked about it being the Wild West, and we know, don't we, from experience, that technology is improving at such a rate, regulation and legislation cannot keep up. So, where should leaders be as they balance exploring the art of the possible and also not doing something which starts to get them in hot water? Is that even possible?
It's a very tricky line right now, and that's something that everyone's trying to navigate. But what I would say is a best
Yep.
practice is that you have to let and encourage people to experiment, but not necessarily, and I would say I strongly would recommend against experimenting with company equipment or
Right.
company assets
So
because
almost
we've
ring
seen
fence it, safely ring fence something.
exactly. So what you don't want to do is say everything is banned. We just discourage everything because that kind of sets the mindset of like we're gonna wait until
Yep.
the laws catch up. We're gonna so you
First
want
follower.
to you wanna say, it, yeah exactly.
Or second or
We're seeing.
third.
Yeah, we're seeing, for example, like some universities, they're doing that. They're just saying, all Gen AI tools are banned. But it's kind of like we know students are using them anyway. And in some ways, students
Right.
should be using them to prepare themselves for kind of the future of work and the career that is rapidly changing, the career path that it is being changed by Gen AI very quickly. But then what we're seeing like some very progressive professors do, for example, is they actually will start to incorporate Gen AI tools into their assignments to say, okay, well, here's a like here's a writing prompt, have ChatGPT write it. Okay, great. Now let's like fine-tune the ChatGPT prompts to kind of make it even better, et cetera. So that's a little bit of a special use case because it's not a corporation, it's students, et cetera. But I just wanted to highlight that as a kind of two different types of philosophies and kind of a way to integrate. Now, what we're seeing at the company level is
Yep.
when we encourage people to experiment with it kind of on a personal level, what that does is it still shows that, hey, we think that Gen AI is the future, is very important for you all to know. But at the same time, we're still trying to figure out how to do that in a secure way as a company. So one example is that Samsung, famously, the employees actually were practicing with ChatGPT, and they input proprietary code into the system. And then it was, that kind of got out, and people were able to see it in other ways, because it was not a secure platform that they put it in.
Course, open
And so
source.
that's kind of what not to do. You don't want to be putting company information, like client information, into these tools. But if you're doing, like, for example, a proposal, like art of the possible, this is what we do at Accenture. It's like, if we're showing a client, like, what could be, like the building of the future, or like your industry of the future, or like we're d doing like a concept art or something like that. Normally, we would have some of our artists create a concept, but now we're having teams experiment with different Gen AI image tools for that kind of creating that art of the possible future. Because of
Gotcha.
course, that's not using client data or anything like that. That's just sort of helping speed up the workflow and get more creative with it. So you have to kind of just, encourage experimentation in the right way without using client data, and find those use cases in your organization where you can safely experiment and encourage everyone to experiment on their own devices otherwise.
So I'm hearing loads of good advice in relation to, proactively finding the people who are playing around or experimenting in this area, creating a culture of experimentation, but ring fencing things so that in some ways you're limiting any fallout. And leaders have got to find the balance, haven't they, between opportunity and experimentation with regulation, legislation, and let's be honest, common sense. But there's got to be there's a gray area, an expanding gray area there, Yulia, isn't there, for all leaders? Because we can't not do anything, because I'm assuming everyone will then be ahead of themselves or ahead of the competition.
Exactly. I mean, on that last point, one of my favorite quotes is, it's not AI that's going to replace you. It's a person using AI that will. So it's kind of like, if you're not giving yourself an edge with those tools, somebody else will be giving themselves an edge, and you will not be able to compete with those kind of people unless you are actively in there yourself. And on the topic of laws and kind of the wild west of regulation right now, I mean, it is absolutely not caught up. Like, the law has not caught up to the technology. So that's why
It may never catch up. Is that, I think.
it may never catch up with how quickly it's changing. Like right now, I'm experimenting personally with a deep fake tool where you can, it's like one click, and I have been like deep faking my own picture into Midjourney created images. And people are asking me, like, can you create one of me? And I'm like, oh yes, I can. I mean, ethically, I'm going to ask you for your permission, but technologically, I could do that just as easily.
Well, serious and organized crime won't be asking permission, will they? That's the reality of it.
Exactly. And the laws, I mean, the laws are very, very squishy in that area. It all depends kind of like, how you're using it, how famous you are, that kind of stuff. I mean, one very famous case of this is, like, somebody created an AI generated comic book. So they created like Midjourney generated images of comic book, and then the text. And then the copyright office granted that as a copyright. And that was for the industry, because they said, okay, that's great. This is Gen AI being, given a copyright. Then, fairly recently, they went back and they revised it. They said, actually, never mind. The images are not, we're going to take away the copyright from the images, because there is not sufficient, and this is the US Copyright Office. They said that this was, there's not sufficient human intervention in those in order to qualify as a copyright. And now that's a huge debate, right? It's like, if you're using Gen AI tools, is that a, like, how much human intervention is that? Or like, is it just like Photoshop? Because Photoshop would not be considered, too much intervention, too much technology, right? So that's the question. Is, like, is Gen AI like the new Photoshop, or is it a complete, thing that is not human generated? So
A new
now there's a
industry.
debate there. I mean, courts.
Yulia, what I'm hearing is there's a whole new industry that's opening up. There are a whole new set of jobs that will open up. And again, we come back to opportunity and risk. Interesting, you talked about deep fake. For the avoidance of any doubt on my part, I am talking to the real Yulia, aren't I? I've got the real Yulia here.
For now.
And deepfakes worry. Deepfakes worry me, actually, Yulia, because, I've come from the criminal justice side of things, and someone will always find something nefarious to do with the new technology. And I remember do you remember the picture? It was only probably a month or so ago that someone created, it was the fake of the Pentagon, an explosion at the Pentagon. And they realized it was a fake quite quickly, but it actually had an impact on the stock prices. So again, this is an example of something that was, I don't know, generated, whether it was from curiosity or mischief. It had a very real impact on the financial sector. So if we genuinely very soon, Yulia, and it is very soon, we can't trust anything we read, anything we hear, and anything we see, are we in real trouble?
It is a very tricky situation because the deep fakes right now, you can kind of tell, and they're sort of a deep fake catchers, if you will.
Yep.
There's like the AI to catch the AI deep fakes right now, but pretty soon it's going to be almost indistinguishable or basically indistinguishable.
Right.
So I actually don't have a great answer for what we're going to do at that point, because you're not going to be able to trust, really anything you see, because it'll be so democratized. Anybody can create anything. I mean, Apple Vision Pro, for example, is coming out early next year.
Yep.
And it's going to be a game changer for what we would call avatar creation. So current avatars are, a little bit cartoony. Some are more realistic than others.
Yes.
But what Apple is going to do is they're actually going to completely recreate your face, so that when you're doing a FaceTime call from their headset, it'll look like you, but it's going to be a completely recreated version of you.
I get more and more frightened every time I listen to these examples, Yulia. In some ways, you've just described how AI will police AI, which in some ways it's marking its own homework, so we're all doomed. You mentioned the new Apple product, and there's a lot of hype over that, and it's like $3,500, I think. Will you be an early adopter of that bit of kit?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because, we have to know it to help with our, to help our clients stay on top, and just for ourselves, because we're just kind of, geeks around this. But I mean, you mentioned the $3,500 price point. I mean, it is very, very steep for the average consumer. So it'll be interesting to see how much adoption it will really get in the consumer market. But certainly what we're excited about is, it will show kind of an Apple-ized, seamless, very natural way of integrating spatial computing and all of this like metaverse continuum technology into our lives. So like, you're looking through the lens and it'll be like looking through the real world, and then digital objects will be superimposed in a way that looks much more real than just seeing them through your phone or being able to see it through like a some other kind of headset.
Right now,
that's not possible right now in a very seamless way.
I think we're going to have to get ourselves one of those in the studio, and then maybe we do another episode, Yulia, where we're doing it with the Apple Vision Pro. I think that's, and who knows where that will go. I'll see if anyone else in the studio gets excited for it. How do people get in touch with you, Yulia? Because this is something that you're focusing on now. You're helping organizations all over the world. What's the best way for them to get in touch, to continue the conversation with you or to get you to help?
Sure. I mean, I think the easiest way is through my LinkedIn. I check it a lot because I'm always following different thought leaders on it and just posting stuff myself. So that's probably kind of the one-stop shop to get in touch with me. And I always love to talk more about technology and kind of people, like how people can learn it, stay on top, work with their teams on it. etc. And I also share some cool like mid-journey examples sometimes as
I've
well.
seen some good posts that you've put out there. So under your name, Yulia Barnikova, if they search, they'll find you on LinkedIn. Connect that way. I hope you're also connected, subscribed, and an avid listener to the Leadership Enigma, Yulia, or certainly, hopefully you will be by Monday. Listen, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. I know it's earlier for you. Thank you for putting up with my mild jet lag in this episode. But listen, it's great to see you again. I hope that we'll do some fantastic projects together. And thank you for taking the time to join the show.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me. It's been so fun, and definitely we'll see how this whole tech landscape evolves, and maybe in the future we'll see you in the metaverse.
I can see an episode in the metaverse in not very long. But that's for sure. Yulia, thanks so much. Look, have a great weekend and many thanks again. Take care.
Take care.
Bye. Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.